Straight out of Philly, this is the Reluctant Theologian Podcast. I am your host, Dr. R.T. Mullins from the University of Lucerne. In today's episode, I want to talk about my recent experiences on TikTok. TikTok has forced me to reflect on a lot of different things, such as the problem of evil and the need for a good theological education. Now notice, I did not say that TikTok is evil. Of course, I did not deny that TikTok is evil either. You're going to have to stick around and find out what I actually think. If you'd like to support the show, you can donate money to my Patreon account or my Ko-fi account. Any donation amount helps me out in so many ways. I greatly appreciate all the support that people have already offered. If you have questions or topics you'd like to hear in the show, you can send me a message at rtmullins.com. Well, ready or not, here I am chatting about TikTok. Enjoy. Act 1, TikTok and Evil. As some of you know, I am now on TikTok, and I have been for several months. John Geary and Than Christopoulos, they somehow convinced me to join. And against my better judgment, I listened to them. They said that the world of TikTok really needs R.T. Mullins. Does the world of TikTok really need R.T. Mullins? No, of course not. Y'all need Jesus. That's what you need, you know? I mean, I knew that TikTok was going to be a dumpster fire, but I somehow did not set my expectations low enough. So today, I want to talk about several things that I've learned from TikTok. Okay, well, maybe not learned from TikTok. I don't think I've actually learned anything other than, you know, about some new metal songs that have come out. How about this? Things that I have been forced to reflect on again because of TikTok. Yeah, let's go with that. Okay, so number one, the importance of getting out of the ivory tower. This is something that I have made a priority for many years. During my PhD in Scotland, I lived in St. Andrews and then in Edinburgh. St. Andrews, it's a lovely little medieval village on the east coast of Scotland. There's a very real sense, though, in which St. Andrews is not Scotland. It's a little America. Half the student population is North American. The place is filled with posh English students and professors. You're only going to meet a handful of actual Scottish people who did not attend a boarding school in England. Now, am I exaggerating? Only slightly. I mean, I hardly had any Scottish students when I was teaching there. And I was teaching there for quite a while. I lived in St. Andrews for the first 2 years of my PhD and then moved to Edinburgh the final year of my PhD. Now, upon moving to Edinburgh, like when I actually was living there, I met actual Scottish people. And Edinburgh, it's also fairly cosmopolitan, so I met people from lots of different countries and lots of different backgrounds. At St. Andrews, in the Divinity Department, there were certain shared assumptions of a very particular sort of Christianity. And I cannot identify all the assumptions because, you know, they shifted over the course of like the 7 years or so that I was there. But what I can tell you is that during my PhD, you know, just at least during my PhD, there was this certain kind of Bardian fideism mixed with bits of high church American Protestantism and a kind of posh English cultural Christianity just assumed in many conversations. And I would often hear like this Bardian propaganda, like the reason the church died out in Europe is because of natural theology. Yes. The church in Europe died because there was too much of an emphasis on reason. Yes, of course. You know, it had nothing to do with widespread corruption, the way that various ideologies led to world wars, and the way that the academy abandoned the task of theology. No. None of that had anything to do with the death of the church in Europe. It is all because offering arguments for the existence of God is somehow the Antichrist, or what other nonsense Bardian slogans would be told. Yeah, sorry, I started this episode really snarky. Let's carry on. Anyway, once I stepped into Edinburgh, I experienced a very different world. I experienced a world of people who wanted to know the truth. They wanted to hear reasons for even thinking that Christianity is not ridiculous. These were people who had complicated relationships with religion throughout their lives. People who want answers and are tired of hearing random slogans just thrown at them. And that was very refreshing for me. And it mattered to me to hear what people outside of the academy wanted. Okay, now fast forward to the year after that when I'm working at the University of Notre Dame. That was a very intellectually stimulating year for me. It really was. But there were times where I felt like I was disconnected from the real world. When I would hear students complaining about, you know, how the law school has a bigger alcohol budget than the philosophy department, or when I would hear some of the pseudo-social justice debates that people were having, it would hit me that we are disconnected from the real world. Some of the conversations were coming from a place of deeply entrenched privilege, all while wrapping themselves in fake virtue. And that, oh gosh, that just made me sick to my stomach. So I decided that wherever God takes me, I need to make it a priority to find friends outside of the ivory tower. For my own sanity, I need to find friends outside of academia. And for the sake of being a better scholar, I need to make meaningful connections with people outside of my little academic bubble. And I need to have a sense of what is going on in other parts of the world. Now, being on TikTok for the past few months has reminded me of this priority that I set for myself. Watching the videos that people are posting, listening to the various live streams, all of this really helps me see what people are talking about outside of my little bubble. So this brings me to the second important reflection I have from TikTok. It's something that Megan Sullivan calls dialectical disadvantage. That's a fancy word. Let me explain it. So dialectical disadvantage, this is a phrase that captures a particular phenomena that often occurs in the middle of a debate. So here's the idea. So say that I have an objection to your view, and that I am able to state my objection quickly and concisely. Now further, imagine that your answer to my quick and concise objection requires a very lengthy answer. You are at a dialectical disadvantage. In terms of appearance, just appearance, the fact that I was able to spout off a quick and pithy objection, it makes me look really smart. And the fact that you cannot rattle off a quick and pithy reply, it makes it look like you do not actually have an answer. So you are at a disadvantage in terms of the debate. Now, of course, the disadvantage, it's all at the level of appearance. My quick wit and concise sentence structure, that does not make me right. Your need to carefully define terms and offer a lengthy answer does not make you wrong. And I'm assuming, you know, most of you listening, you know that. Why? Well, because you've read a book at some point in your life. But here's the thing. A lot of people on TikTok are deceived by appearances. They want the quick 10-second answer. And if someone cannot offer a 10-second answer, it is automatically assumed that they are dumb and possibly even wicked. Let me give you a common example of this. So Megan Sullivan, when she's talking about dialectical disadvantage, she offers the example of the logical problem of evil. Why? Well, because it's not terribly difficult to state the logical problem of evil. Well, you could do it pretty quickly. And oftentimes, you can even just start shouting, "Why would God allow this terrible thing to happen?" Then you start shouting different horrible things that have happened, and you keep angrily demanding that those evil, dumb theists, they have to give an answer. And if that answer takes longer than 10 seconds, well, those stupid theists are clearly no good, awful people who cannot possibly answer your objection. I get this a lot on TikTok. Someone wants to know the answer to the problem of evil. If I say, well, you know, let's start by defining some terms here, I immediately get groans. For example, I might point out that we need to start with a definition of God. You know, and I'll say, the concept of God is that of a perfect being, which is the single ultimate foundation of reality. And the response I will get is, well, but are you a Christian? Well, yeah, I'm a Christian, but you asked me what God is, and I just told you. You see, these people, they do not want to hear about basic definitions. They want to jump ahead to screaming about God being this horrible dictator that ruins everyone's lives. If I ask people to slow down and properly set up the arguments, I get a lot of really angry comments. Now, sometimes the hosts on these live streams, they have a bit of patience, so they'll allow me the opportunity to, you know, kind of set up the debate first and then give an answer. But a lot of people are typically shocked by my insistence that we get clear on the terms of the debate first, and that we have to actually set up a real argument. They don't know how to deal with someone who knows how to set up an actual argument. I mean, they don't know how to do this because they're only used to dealing with people who just give 10-second slogans. Now, what's funny is to watch the comments section during all of this. You're going to have people in the chat just like lying about what I'm saying, and then you're also going to have other people saying, oh man, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. You see, when it comes to the problem of evil, there are a lot of nuanced things that need to be said. There just are no quick, easy 10-second answers. So here's how I see it. If you want to have a meaningful examination of the different problems of evil, you're going to have a lot of legwork that you need to do. First, you have to identify the basic concept of God, and then talk about different models of God. This is because each model of God is going to offer different answers to a host of relevant questions. Well, what are those relevant questions? Well, to start, you need to look at the question, why would God create anything at all? And then you have to ask, why would God create this particular universe? When people are reflecting on the existence of evil in our world, they have unidentified assumptions. Many of those unidentified assumptions, they unwittingly presuppose various kinds of answers to why God would create it all and why God would create this particular universe. And here's the important thing to know. The way that people answer the particular universe question, that sets the basic framework for how they might go about addressing different kinds of problems of evil. Did God create a universe where creatures have free will? Did God create a fully deterministic universe? Did God create a universe just to watch electrons spin in the void? I don't know. What you think God's reasons are for creating, and what you think God's reasons are for creating the kind of universe that we find ourselves in, all of that is going to have a big impact on how you explain the existence of evil in this world. So, for example, a lot of people assume that if God exists, then every single instance of evil and suffering must be immediately connected to a very specific greater good that will just somehow immediately be obvious to all reasonable humans involved. Now, personally, I just reject that assumption. I mean, after years of studying the issue, I think that Molinists and open theists can and should reject that assumption. But you see, all of this depends on what kind of universe you think God made, and why you think God made it. There are no 10-second answers to the problem of evil. And in fact, there is no such thing as the problem of evil. There are a bunch of different sets of problems. These are just some of the important pieces of the puzzle for even beginning to properly investigate the problems of evil. Now look, I teach a class at the University of Lucerne called God, Freedom, and Evil. I offer over 20 lectures on different issues, the different problems of evil, and the different proposed solutions. I really know painfully that there are no 10-second answers. There are detailed, complicated answers. Those detailed, complicated answers reflect the complicated reality that we find ourselves in. But do people have the patience to investigate the questions that matter most to us? That brings me to my third TikTok reflection. Short attention spans and pre-evangelism. So back in the 1970s and 80s, there was this guy named Francis Schaeffer. Some of you will know who he is. So Schaeffer said that America was entering into an age where Christianity would no longer be assumed. He said that there would be a need to engage in what he called pre-evangelism. So here's what Schaeffer had in mind with this. You will need to convince people that the idea of God is coherent and that there are reasons to believe that God exists. You will need to convince people that the Bible is trustworthy and that Jesus was this actual guy who really did live and die. You can no longer just assume that everyone knows the basic Christian story. I mean, in other words, you're going to have to do a lot of natural theology. And I think he was absolutely right about all of that. And I'm thankful that when Schaeffer was writing those things, I'm very thankful that analytic philosophy of religion and natural theology were just starting to undergo a renaissance. But here's something I don't think Schaeffer really most people at that point in time, I don't think they could have foreseen what was going to happen. The ever-dwindling attention span of the modern American. Schaeffer is right that there needs to be a lot of pre-evangelism, definitely a lot more than Americans had in the 1950s. But in my opinion, the pre-evangelism, it needs to take a different form. We are no longer talking about people who don't really know the basic Christian story. We are talking about people who cannot pay attention for longer than a 30-second TikTok video. If it's not some pretty girl doing her makeup, you're going to lose the audience very quickly. So here's my question to all of you listening. Have we taught the younger generations the importance of patience when investigating life's biggest questions? Have we taught them the need to slowly investigate the hard problems, and spent a long time reflecting on possible solutions. Have we embodied this virtue in our own lives? 10-second answers, they're not going to help us, and people need to know this. There are real people in this world who think that if there is no quick, pithy answer, then every theistic religion is just a complete sham. I mean, sorry if this sounds too harsh, but I think that whole way of thinking is just deeply naive. People have spent their lives chasing things that have only brought them pain. In the end, when they are dead, they hope that it was worth something. Is this a value that we are instilling in the youth of America? Are we teaching them that the search for truth is not easy? Or are we trying to force quick, flashy answers down their throat so that they will just shut up and comply?
I have spent my life chasing things that have only brought me pain. In the end, when I'm dead, hope it was for something.
Act 2, The Need for a Good Theological Education. Here is my fourth TikTok reflection. Some people, they don't care about the search for truth. They only want to keep up appearances. As you might expect, there are a lot of people on TikTok who just don't care about the truth. They just want to shout in order to look like the person in the room who is smart, or the person in the room who has the high moral ground. I mean, obviously, this is not unique to TikTok. I mean, MSNBC and Fox News, they both do this every single night. I mean, here's a recent encounter that I had on a TikTok live stream. I was trying to answer some question I was asked, and this guy just angrily interjects. He just kept doing it, and he shouted at me, "You think God knows everything? Then your God is a pervert." Now, since this is all happening live, I have to react quickly. And I really want to laugh because it's not every day, you know, you're told your God is a pervert. But I refrained from laughing at this guy because I could tell he's not joking. He's just a very, very angry young man. So instead of laughing, I quickly told this young man that, well, you know what? I published a paper in religious studies on the problem of creepy divine emotions. I can take you through these arguments if you want. What did he do when I offered to take him through the arguments on the problem of creepy divine emotions? He was just silent. He didn't have anything to say in response. Why? Because he was not interested in searching for the truth. He was just very angry, and he wanted to shout at me about God being a pervert. You see, this guy just wants to appear virtuous. He just wants to sound like he's always taking the moral high ground. Truth does not matter. And then, of course, you've got other people on TikTok. They want to pretend to be intellectuals. They don't actually know anything, but they want to appear smart. They really do. So they find some random slogans they heard from some other angry internet atheist or whomever, and they keep regurgitating it over and over. Or they find these gotcha questions that have no quick answers, so they hammer that gotcha question just loudly over and over. Now, this is really wild to me. I mean, some of the slogans and questions, they are so dumb. I mean, just so dumb that I don't even know where to begin. I mean, the propaganda that I keep hearing on TikTok, it's overwhelming. So let me give you some examples of this. So here's one slogan I keep hearing. Jesus was a Muslim. Jesus was a Muslim? No, that statement is so dumb. It's so dumb, I don't even know where to begin to address it. I mean, it is so far detached from reality that words fail me. I mean, who would be so stupid as to come up with that statement? I mean, it's just shocking. Like, how do you even begin to answer the question, was Jesus a Muslim? I mean, obviously you're going to have to start by defining what a Christian is and then define what a Muslim is. And then you have to do this little thing called basic history. But by that point, you've already lost the audience. What I really want to tell people who say this kind of stuff is, you know what? You should not be allowed to talk until you've read a book. Like, I don't care what book it is. It could be C-Spot Run. It could be Harry Potter. I don't care. But you lost your talking privileges. You are just not allowed to talk until you can read just at least one book. When I was a kid, Pizza Hut gave you a free pizza if you read a certain number of books each month. Most of the people on TikTok should not be allowed to have any more pizza again until they read at least one book a month. And if you want to talk about religion, you better keep your mouth shut until you read at least one introduction to world religions. But of course, I cannot say that. At least I can't say it out loud. Jesus was a Muslim. What's wrong with you people? Here's another bit of propaganda I keep hearing. No New Testament scholar says that Jesus was pre-existent. Excuse me? No New Testament scholar believes that like in the pre-existence of Jesus? Where are you getting this crap from? Like I am shocked every time I hear it. I know that there is a debate among New Testament scholars about this sort of thing, but the claim that I keep hearing is that no New Testament scholar believes that the Bible teaches that Jesus pre-existed his earthly birth. And then sometimes the claim is that the overwhelming majority of New Testament scholars, like that they all just deny the pre-existence of Jesus, or that no real scholar believes in the pre-existence of Jesus. This is such a dumb bit of propaganda. I was unaware that people were even saying this kind of stuff. So here's what I have to tell people on TikTok. I have personally worked with biblical studies professors, like at different universities, who think that the New Testament teaches the pre-existence of Jesus. So people like Richard Bauckham and N.T. Wright. Of course, when I drop those names on TikTok, like no one knows who those scholars are. Now, I worked at the University of Cambridge. Simon Gathercole is a professor of New Testament studies at Cambridge. He literally wrote a book called The Pre-Existent Son. I have that book on my shelf. And these people out here are on TikTok. They're telling me no New Testament scholar would ever say such things. But then I've got the book in my hand. Look, it's one thing to say that there is a debate among biblical scholars about the pre-existence of the Son. But it's something completely different to say that no New Testament scholar affirms the pre-existence of the Son. I mean, Professor Simon Gathercole from the University of Cambridge wrote a book called The Pre-Existent Son. I even had a conversation with Gathercole about this book. So one day at Cambridge, Simon and I were chatting, and I said I had a copy of his book, The Pre-Existent Son, on my bookshelf. And I told him, I said, Simon, you know, I find your book very helpful. Of course, I didn't specify what I meant by helpful, because you see, at that point, I had not read Simon's book yet. But a few days before, I saw a bug in my apartment, and I grabbed the biggest book I could find, and I squashed that bug. I just squashed it, you know? I grabbed a copy of The Pre-Existent Son and used that to kill the bug in my apartment. So Professor Gathercole's book, it was very useful for killing bugs. You know, it's not too heavy, so I can swing it quite quickly. But it's not too light, so, you know, it's definitely going to kill the bug. So yeah, Gathercole's book, it's very helpful. Now, Simon, if you're listening, I actually did read the book eventually at some point in my life, and I think it's very useful for New Testament studies. It's not just useful for killing bugs. Your book actually has a lot of different important values. But if you need a blurb for your next book, you know, put me down. Reverend Dr. R.T. Mullen says that this book can be used to kill vermin and correct idiots on TikTok. I'm sure that book blurb, I'm sure that's going to sell you a lot of copies. Anyway, Rodney, where am I in this conversation? Oh, okay. Yeah. Point number 5. Theology is deeply relevant to today's culture. You just need to know where to look. There was this piece in The Guardian recently that declared that theology is dead, useless, and irrelevant. If you don't know what The Guardian is, it's this British newspaper that fake liberals and other pseudo-intellectuals like to read to help them feel smart and better than everyone else. Gosh, I'm being so unnecessarily bitchy on this episode. Man, I really need my new summer interns to start soon to really kind of help me rein it in. Like Rodney over here, he just encourages me to be more snarky. Yeah, I'm talking about you. I mean, you're not helping me out here. Okay. I know I've been way more snarky since moving to Philadelphia. I mean, this place just fills everyone with a constant low level of rage. Gosh, I need to get out of this godforsaken city. Anyway, what am I talking about? Okay, the piece in The Guardian saying that theology is useless. It said that if science disappeared from the earth, people would notice immediately. But if theology disappeared from the earth, no one would notice. This is why I said that The Guardian is for fake liberal pseudo-intellectuals. I mean, if you really support liberal values and honest intellectual inquiry, you would realize that the world is bigger than your little posh Oxbridge circle. I mean, the sheer number of religion-based TikTok channels, it's pretty astounding. Now, I know that Oxbridge is unaware of the world of TikTok. I mean, they're not going to become aware of that for another 5 years. And only then in 5 years are they going to start offering courses on it. I mean, that's how out of touch with the culture like a lot of these places can be sometimes. I mean, I can just imagine it. Like, some old academic in 5 years from now, he's going to say, like, "I say, dear chap, did you see what the youths are up to today? They have this thing on the internet called the TikTok. Perhaps this is an area of academic study that one might investigate." "Yes, one might indeed. Yes, I shall have one of my PhD students examine one or two channels and use that as a basis for investigating the various goings-on on this platform. Perhaps you should also have a PhD student examine LiveJournal or the MySpace while we're at it. I mean, we want to be exhaustive in our study of modern youths." Sorry. Look, here's my point. Religion and religious questions, they are debated every single day all over the planet. Why? Because humans are meaning-making creatures, curious by nature, constantly trying to figure out the ultimate nature of reality. Questions about the existence and nature of God, they have played a major role in Eastern and Western history. The role of God in religious beliefs, it played a massive role in the development of science. It is a well-studied topic that certain Christian beliefs sparked the scientific revolution. It is a well-studied topic that certain theological beliefs have played a role in the development of quantum mechanics. I mean, I can't think of a more ignorant, illiberal statement than theology could disappear and no one would notice. I cannot think of a more ignorant, illiberal statement because I didn't read the issue of The Guardian today. I'm sure there's plenty more of nonsense in today's issue. Whatever, I'm being overly snarky again. I'm sorry. Okay, maybe I'm not sorry. Here's my question. Would the world be profoundly different if theology disappeared from the academic world? Yes, obviously. Religion would not disappear if all of the theology departments closed down tomorrow. Religious questions would not disappear if the fake liberals just ousted all of the theologians out of the academy. You would just get more of the people I find on TikTok. You would just get a whole lot more of the incredibly bad theology that takes place on TikTok. And trust me, you do not want more of that in the world than we already have. We need theology in the academy precisely because theology is a deeply important area of human inquiry and rational investigation into life's biggest questions. So what are we going to do about this? Okay, don't get me wrong. Like, I've been making fun of like some of these like so-called liberals. Let me make fun of some of the American conservatives for a second then, just to kind of even things out. These American conservatives at the moment, a lot of them are constantly decrying a college education. And I'm getting really tired of hearing conservatives say that we should stop sending our children to college. Or there's just saying that like a college degree is a waste of time. I'm sorry, but that's just stupid. It's stupid. America needs an educated population. Every country does. Everyone should be given a quality education. And I firmly believe that. So I'm getting really tired of hearing these conservative talking points about how the problem is college. There is something that I agree with the conservatives on. I do feel like there's a very real sense in which the humanities have betrayed humanity. The humanities have been taken over by these things like critical theory and developed these painfully shallow narratives of oppression. There are times where it feels like the studies of the humanities are nothing other than looking for some new form of oppression to write about, so one can pump out like another publication in a journal. So I am unsurprised when I see college-educated people spew those kind of shallow narratives and slogans and unironically use those shallow slogans and narratives to oppress and silence everyone they disagree with. That's just what happens when you let shallow narratives and ideological slogans take over and dictate how we think and talk about important issues. And we cannot allow that. Shallow ideologies, closed minds, and closed hearts are the problem. The solution is not to get rid of university. The solution is not to get rid of humanities departments. The solution is not to get rid of theology departments and then just only focus on science and technology. No, that is inhumane. Yes, I think that many American humanities departments have betrayed humanity, but it is inhumane to abandon the important study of the humanities. I am the product of an undergraduate degree in the humanities. My undergraduate degree was a mix of history, philosophy, art, literature, theology, and biblical studies. I was given the opportunity to study Western and Eastern intellectual and artistic traditions. That's the kind of well-rounded education that we need to offer future generations so that they can understand the way the world is and hopefully use that knowledge to make the world better. What we need is a reformation of the humanities. As C.S. Lewis said about education during a time of war, he said we need good philosophy precisely because there's so much bad philosophy out there. And what we're witnessing right now is bad philosophy based on bigotry and hatred of fellow man. What we have witnessed over the past 15 years in America are ideologies of hatred shrouded in the veil of social justice, claiming a moral authority that no one is allowed to criticize. If we had been good students of the history of thought, we would have recognized this. We would have said, the world has seen this kind of authoritarianism before. We need to proceed with caution and teach the importance of a critical mind. That's what we would have said. We should have spoken louder about the importance of real virtue instead of the shallow virtue signaling. What we are witnessing right now is the mask of all these shallow slogans coming off. The true face of the underlying hatred is coming out to play. Do we have the strength to put a stop to it? Do we have the minds sharp enough to identify it and argue against it? That depends on how well we have educated our children and on how well we have educated ourselves. Did we take the time to learn the classics? Did we learn the history of philosophy, theology, and politics? Did we study the history and culture of different eras? Did we learn to appreciate truth, beauty, and goodness of other cultures? Did we learn to identify the ugliness, the lies, and the wickedness of other time periods? Or did we get emotionally blackmailed into adopting shallow narratives by those wanting so badly to take power and make money? Have we been disciplined enough to cultivate the open minds and open hearts necessary to reform the humanities and pass on that knowledge to future generations? I don't know the answers to those questions, and it haunts me. Do you?
Can we start again? Go back to what it meant back then. Open minds and open heart. Nothing that set us apart. Can we start again? Go back to what it meant back then. Open minds and open heart. Nothing that set us apart. Can we start again? Go back to what it meant back then. Open minds and open heart. Nothing that set us apart.
But the more than words, they still apply. If we still believe, well, so do I. Was it more than words?
Act 3. It's not all bad. Here is my sixth and final reflection for my time on TikTok. The reality of deep thinking and a passion for truth. I know I just spent this whole episode like ranting about TikTok and everything, but there is a sense in which TikTok has renewed my faith in humanity. I know I just said, you know, most of this episode just saying the opposite, but I want to end on a positive note. There are people on TikTok having, you know, somewhat sophisticated conversations and debates. People, they're not professional academics, but people who care very passionately about the search for truth. And they're reading academic papers and books. Like, they're watching these academic seminars that I have attended and I find boring. But these people, they're watching those boring academic seminars because they want to know the truth. Now, earlier I said that humans are meaning-making creatures, curious by nature. And what I see on TikTok is exactly this. That spark in humanity that prevents us from ever really being satisfied. That craving in our bones that just keeps poking, that just keeps asking questions. That innate primal scream in us that demands to know what is true, what is beautiful, and what is good. The sheer number of TikTokers who are asking theological and philosophical questions, it's somewhat overwhelming to me. It tells me that there is a real hunger for good answers to some of life's biggest questions. I'm seeing debates that would never make it on primetime news, but that's just because the mainstream media is not interested in religious debates anymore. But people are interested in religious debates. So those debates, they're happening all over YouTube and TikTok, and they're getting better ratings than Don Lemon's new show. I'm not being silly here. I'm not trying to be facetious. Some of these TikTok live streams that I go on, like, they're really impressive. I jump on and I am hit with question after question for over an hour or two. I did not come prepared to offer a master's seminar on the philosophy of religion, and yet here I am in a TikTok live stream having to give one. Why? Because the questions that some of these people ask, they're just so good. Not everyone on there is an idiot, you know? A lot of them really have done their homework, and they are dying. They're just dying for a chance to talk to an expert about the details. They want to float their ideas that, I mean, to be honest, really, some of them could be published in a journal. They want to talk about some particular philosophical problem that really bothers them, that causes a struggle of faith, or that prevents them from having faith. They really have a deep passion for truth and sophisticated argumentation, and it shows in the way that they conduct themselves. What I am witnessing on TikTok really takes me back. When I was studying my PhD, and I heard these pompous people just belittle natural theology and hear them say that no one cares about natural theology, but then I look at just, you know, your average like TikTok live stream, and I see all these kids debating the finer points of the fine-tuning argument for the existence of God, I can't help but laugh. People desperately want to know if God exists. They want to debate that question precisely because the question of God's existence, it matters so much. So my dear listener, how do we do that well? How do we take this passion in many of these teenagers that I'm seeing, how do we take that passion and stir it into the flames of a genuine intellectual revolution? A revolution founded on reason and compassion. A revolution sparked by free inquiry into life's biggest questions. I do not know how to spark that revolution, but it is one that we desperately need. We need to get away from all the silly culture wars and foster the growing passion for actual intellectual freedom and inquiry that I am seeing in the younger generations. May God give us the wisdom to cut through the mainstream BS and get to the heart of what really matters. And there you have it, another episode of the Reluctant Theologian Podcast. Stay tuned for more episodes on philosophical theology.